Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Small Business Digest Radio. My name is Don Mazzella, and I am your host for a program devoted to identifying strategies and suggestions to help small business managers increase profits, add sales, better manage cash flow, improve employee management, and streamline operations. Our guests are other entrepreneurs and experts offering their solutions to the problems and opportunities facing small business leaders. Our aim in each program is to provide one or two thought-provoking ideas or suggestions. So follow us on Twitter at #2SBDigest or at our website at www.smallbusinessdigest.net. Today is a very interesting day. We have three very different but informative guests. And our first one is Josh Hatfield. He's going to talk about something that a lot of people ignore, ways to avoid getting abandoned at the register. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, Don. Thanks for having me today.
Well, as we ask all of our guests, Josh, first tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you're calling from San Antonio, Texas, but tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, great. So I've actually been in the IT industry for about 17 years or so, more so on the engineering side. I want to say I started off supporting college infrastructure and then slowly transitioned into the web and cloud hosting over at Rackspace. Supporting customers at Rackspace for 9 years, I think, really helped me understand what pain points our customers have and gave me a ton of exposure to different CMSs, e-commerce platforms, not just on the technical standpoint, but also from the marketing perspective, how these things are actually impacting customers from a revenue standpoint. You know, customers would often call in and ask questions on how they would increase their SEO rankings, decrease their page load times. Essentially, it all equated to money being lost and given to their competitors. Well, today I actually work for Hostway as and consult customers with their cloud and digital workloads. I believe my experience has really helped put me in a position to help SMB organizations increase their uptime and also increase their market traction, essentially just making them more money.
All right. So, having said that, okay, how does one go about it? Give us some specifics.
Well, you know, there was a study done, I want to say it was Kissmetrics, that said that there's 40% of online shoppers abandon it, their cart, if a website takes more than 3 seconds to load. Now, I think that these studies have always been there, but the problem with today versus a few years ago is that there's more e-commerce sites online today, and there's a lot more of our shopping being done online, you know, just as technical evolution evolves. So what you need to do nowadays is essentially just make it simple for the customer. You really got to give them confidence. And what I've done before was I came up with like 12 ideas to help reduce shopping cart abandonment for e-commerce sites. It doesn't matter what the e-commerce site is. The rules apply the same. I mean, you need a solid security indicator. You need to let them know that when they come to your site, it's safe. It's not malicious, so you need to have a security indicator. A lot of people, when they get to a website, if there's no security indicator saying, hey, we've been tested by McAfee or we're not PCI compliant or et cetera, they're immediately going to leave. So you got to give them that confidence to buy.
Well, you're on a roll. Keep going.
So the other things are, you know, giving them the option to sign up. First-time buyers may not want to create an account at your site. So if you don't give them that option, you can always register them later since you've already captured their email address. not just, you know, signing up and forcing them to have an account, but also give them the option to have different payment options. Give them PayPal, Google Wallet, or whatever else that you have. And then some of the other things that we found that actually help customers out is getting them free shipping. Sometimes if they're going to buy a product and it's heavy, they want to see what the price is going to be for shipping. Otherwise, they may order it through Amazon. So if you offer a free shipping, they may buy it from you instead. And then making the shopping cart experience easier, making it fast. You can give them an indicator saying, hey, you have 2 steps to go or you have 3 steps to go. Give them that progress meter, and then also give them the option to manually update fields by putting your billing address in and making that your default for the shipping address. Of course, like all shoppers, you know, they want to have limited time offers. I mean, no one walks in and wants to pay a premium for things. So if you give them limited time offers, they're probably going to add that to their, you know, some abandoned carts result from consumers simply wanting to see what the total cost would be. Incentivizing the purchase now with promotional rates really helps increase that.
I just want to ask a question, Jeff. Just a question for you. I've always been told the less options you give people, the more likely you are to get a sale. Yet you're saying just that you're giving them more to say. Am I wrong, or you know, you're giving them that?
Yeah, you're right to an extent, Don. You know, when customers come to your website, they're coming to buy a specific item. They've searched for it through Google, Yahoo, whatever it may have been, Bing. They've identified your business. They went to your website, and now they've identified a product. So if your product is marked up a little bit, they may not buy it. But then if you give them a limited time offer, if you buy now within the next 24 hours or, you know, 5 minutes or whatever it may be, some promotional thing, the odds of them adding it to their cart are going to increase. And that's what I mean by limited time offers.
Okay. Well, keep going. You're on a roll, so as I say, you're telling us things we should know. Keep going.
The other thing that's commonly overlooked, Don, is real-time support. If a customer's having difficulties or simply has questions about the website that doesn't answer, live chat, web interfaces, all those things just reinforce the idea that you care about customers and the customer service. Having some form of real-time support, even if it's a telephone number, is better than not. Backlinks, you know, I've gone to websites and I went to purchase something, I'm sure you have, and then you press the back button and it doesn't let you go back. It just frustrates you. Then you end up just closing out the website in general, again, resulting in shopping cart abandonment. Give the customer the opportunity to backtrack and revisit the catalog without using the browser's back button. If nothing else, it's just a visual reminder that you're not trying to track your customers. Hmm. And then, you know, most of us do shopping during the day. It's a fortunate fact and unfortunate, I guess, to some businesses that, you know, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, a lot of people are online shopping. And we often get busy. So allow them the opportunity to save their shopping cart. If a customer is interrupted during the purchasing process or just wants to use a shopping cart as a wish list, let them return back to it. Let them just input their email address and come back to it or use cookies and caching so that the wish list and options could be there later on down the road. This also allows you to run email marketing campaigns to them, reminding them that, hey, you have this in your shopping cart. Don't forget about this. Or this item just now became available or on sale. That lets you use that as this additional marketing tactic. And then cross-sell where appropriate. You know, if you're going to suggest other products that a customer may be interested in during the checkout process, make sure these suggestions make, both in terms of expense and the items, whatever the items are. You know, the algorithm of picking related products can really push a customer away or be the difference of you increasing the overall ARPU of your sale that you just sold them. So that's essentially it. You know, it's typical common sense, but it's things that we overlook often. And the overall thing is just to make sure that we're streamlining the customer's user experience and we're able to give them the tools that they need to buy the products as fast as possible.
Josh, your website?
Hostway.com.
Okay. And I'm a small business. What do you do for me? Do you create the website? Do you help? What's your role, your preferred role in all of this?
Yeah, so I'm actually one of the senior managers over the digital and cloud workloads. And my job is to simply help customers identify what the best solution is for them and their organization, whether it's to help them identify HA capabilities, the beneficials of HA, or if it's to help them just create a marketplace for themselves. You know, that's my job and my team's job to do. We don't essentially make websites for our customers. We have SIs that do those things for them. But whether it's a Magento platform or any other CMS, we're able to help them. Now, from an SMB standpoint and customers that are just getting started, Magento is a great CMS to start with. We actually have a new offering coming out. Magento as a service starts at $99 a month, and it's fully managed all the way up through the application there. So a lot of organizations are going to be loving that.
Okay. Josh, we have another guest, David Edelson, coming on. I'd like you to stay on and comment, if you will, because he's going to talk about the common mistakes small businesses make. And I'd like you to stay on. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, first, let me unmute. Dave, are you on board?
Hi, Don. I'm here.
Thank you very much
for having me on today.
Well, Josh Hatfield is on, and he's just given us a lot of food for thought, and we're going to get back with him. But you have a fascinating target. But before we get into it, tell us a little bit about yourself personally before anything else.
I'd be happy to. First and foremost, thank you very much, Don, and your audience for your time today. I very much appreciate it. My name is Dave Edelson. I am a human resources director at a company called Trinet. And Trinet is a strategic partner to small and medium-sized businesses for HR, payroll, employee benefits, employment law compliance, and risk mitigation. I've worked for Trinet for roughly 14 years and have been in human resources for the past 20 years, pretty much my entire career. I am originally from Philadelphia and have been in the Boston area for the past 25 years.
Boy, that is about as complete as you're going to get of an introduction. I wish all of my guests were as complete as that. Well, now your topic is the mistakes that small businesses make.
Specifically, it's the top five HR human resources mistakes that small businesses or startups make.
Well now to use one of my oft-used phrase, the floor is yours. Please tell us what they are, because I'm sure I've done them.
So, you know, it's kind of an introduction. In my more than 20 years working in human resources, there's one thing I've learned above really everything else, and that's that human resources is incredibly complex. Ideally, what I'd like to do is, again, share with the audience and yourself five of the most common human resources, I'll be polite and say opportunities for improvement, that I've seen that small organizations and startups make. The first of which is insufficient or lack of job descriptions. Now, a job description ideally has and contains the essential duties and responsibilities for a position in the organization. And ideally, every position would have a job description. Job descriptions are so important because there's something that you're going to use or an organization is going to use right from the beginning. When you're interviewing candidates, the job description is going to outline what the essential duties, responsibilities, and expectations are. if you hire that individual, again, the employee will be held accountable to those outlined essential duties and responsibilities. If the employee is performing well, you're doing the review, again, you're tying it back to the job description. If they're not doing well, you, again, had outlined and set the expectations from the beginning. So let me give you an example. You know, one of the things I hear from organizations is, it's a lot of work. You know, job descriptions, you want me to do one in writing for every single position? What's the point? I mean, what's the harm in really not having them? So a few years ago, I had a client of mine that called me, and they had an employee working on the East Coast. And long story short, this individual, the client called me and said, look, we're having some performance problems with an employee. They've been with us for about a year, and it's not working out, and we want to, you know, we need some help. I said, okay, tell me about the situation. They say the employee is supposed to be traveling to a client of ours on the West Coast. They're not doing it, and we want to get rid of them. I said, well, do they know that they were supposed to be traveling to the West? Yes. Well, how do they know, I asked. And the client said, well, we told them when we initially hired them. And I said, okay, do you have anything in writing that talked about this? No. What happened was it made it far more difficult to say, well, we had a conversation with you 10 months ago and we told you you'd be traveling to the West Coast. That was the expectation. What did the employee say when they approached the employee about this? No, I don't recall that. I was never told I'd be traveling or that was the expectation. So ideally, again, one of the most important points here is to have a job description in writing for each position. And ideally, the job description will contain essential duties and responsibilities, information that says a company does not discriminate on the basis of sex, age, et cetera, and that we're an equal opportunity employer. So that's number one. Don, what are your thoughts? Any questions about that?
You're doing fine. Josh, how do you feel about all this?
No, I concur entirely with them. You know, I think that what David is mentioning, in my experience, hasn't been the key thing that organizations do. There's the assumption, right, that you have to embrace change. And embrace change means you have to do what's best for the company, not essentially what's best for you. And you're expected to step up and do things outside your scope of employment, scope of work, what you were hired to do. Being very specific and detailed, David, I'm sure you know, you've probably seen it. If you are very specific and detailed, it's going to help you mitigate risk down the road, whether it be litigation or whatnot. And hopefully avoid all those things and just hire someone that really is what you need. I mean, that's the goal. The goal is not to fire people. The goal is to keep people employed and to make them happy.
Exactly. So should I go on to the next item?
Keep on going.
Okay. So the next item is misclassification of employees. What I've seen is many entrepreneurs face, and this was just mentioned, potential litigation for violating wage and hour laws set by what's called the Fair Labor Standards Act, the FLSA. And some of the more common classification mistakes I've seen are classifying employees as exempt. Now, I don't mean to put you gentlemen on the spot, but I will in a second and ask you a question about that. Typically, what I find is for small organizations, startups, when I ask them, what exactly is an exempt employee? They'll say, well, an exempt employee is a salaried employee, and non-exempt is the other classification. Well, non-exempt are your hourly employees. What do you guys think? Is that correct?
No.
Why?
Well, I have this happens to be my program, and other people have brought it up. you know, and people have said to me on many occasions, So keep on going. Tell us more.
Okay. So exempt employees, and that's close. Commonly, exempt employees are salaried, but not all the time. The distinction and the correct information is an exempt employee is exempt from overtime pay. In other words, an exempt employee is not eligible, does not earn overtime. A non-exempt employee is eligible for overtime. To make this even, and I'll talk about what overtime provisions are, to make it even more wonderful and confusing, overtime provisions can vary. There are federal provisions that say that overtime is typically paid at time and a half. An employee makes $10 an hour. For hours over 40 in a work week, an employee gets overtime at time and a half. Again, in the example, an employee is making $10 an hour. Overtime for hours over 40 is paid at $15 an hour. Now, different states may have different overtime provisions, which, again, an organization would need to be aware of. So there's potential inaccurate payment of wages that goes along with that. Also, misclassifying employees as independent contractors. I've seen several suits by individuals, class actions, with regard to an individual that's classified as an independent contractor versus an employee. And the IRS has its own kind of 20-point factor analysis in determining what constitutes an independent contractor versus what constitutes an employee. An independent contractor typically is not eligible for workers' compensation coverage, unemployment benefits, health benefits, other benefits that an employee would be entitled to. So that's also something that an organization should be wary of, making sure they are classifying employees correctly. If there are no questions, I can continue to the next item, which is kind of hand-in-hand with what we were talking about, not being aware of all federal and state laws. So there's all types of labor and employment laws at the federal, state, and local levels. Just to mention a few real quick. We already talked about the Fair Labor Standards Act, or FLSA. This, again, establishes everything from minimum wage, overtime pay, record keeping, and youth employment standards. There's the Family Medical Leave Act, or FMLA, which is federal, provides job protection for unpaid family-related medical leave. The Americans with Disabilities Act, final pay rules, which determine when and what to pay employees, a termination, for example. And again, that can vary. That could depend upon whether the employee's voluntarily resigning or being involuntarily terminated by the company. That can also vary by state. Different states have different regulations. Massachusetts, for example, involuntary termination. In involuntary termination in Massachusetts, employee has to be paid their final wages, including accrued unused vacation time on the employee's last day. In other states, it may vary based on the company policy. State may not have any regulations, which, again, defaults to company policy. So the point here is an organization really needs a partner to help them provide HR risk management services to kind of maneuver through and navigate through all of these various federal and state requirements. It's hard. And these rules and regulations change constantly. And you really need someone that knows what they're doing and is on top of it, a company like TriNet, for example.
Well, I want to keep Josh involved in this. I know we're doing a lot of heavy HR work, but do you have any thoughts, Josh, what's being said?
You know, Don, with David working at TriNet and, you know, them having the experience of, you know, managing over 85 national customers, I think they have over like 2,300 employees underneath their belt. I'm over here just taking notes myself. So if it has to do with technology, I could definitely jump in. But at this point, you know, it's more informative.
Okay. I think you're worthwhile staying on if you don't mind, because I always find programs where people interact. So please bear with
us. Let me ask a question to David. You know, David, you see the organizations shift from an ETO to a PTO type basis. So that as an ETO, you know, they, I believe the employees, if they leave the organization, they, that has to be paid out. But a PTO basis, they don't have to be paid out. Can you speak to that from an HR standpoint and the benefits of such?
And again, tell me again if they switch from, I just didn't hear you.
So they would go from organizations that were typically doing an ETO, an earned time off, where when an employee leaves the organization, whether it be termed or at will, and they have, let's say, 80 hours of ETO accrued, they would be paid out on those 80 hours because they've earned it. Versus a PTO, they, if they leave the organization, they're not entitled to that paid time off, and that would not be on their last paycheck.
You know, it's a great question. It really is going to depend upon the organization's policy. Ideally, there should be a policy in writing that outlines and is communicated to all employees about how vacation time or paid time off is accrued, whether it's separate vacation and sick time, whether it's lumped into one as paid time off, and what the state requirements are as well. So let me give you an example when I mention this. First of all, there's no requirement to even provide paid time off. So a company doesn't have to provide vacation time, for example. If it does, and if it has a written policy, it's going to need to adhere to that policy. So if our policy is that an employee earns, say, 3 weeks of vacation time that is earned over the year, and the employee joins in January and has been there 6 months, has earned, say, 20 hours of vacation time, and then resigns, and the employee works in a state in which earned vacation time is paid out at termination. Again, certain states have those requirements, California, Massachusetts, for example. That time is considered earned wages and needs to be paid at termination. Other states do not require that. Even if you have a policy, you could have a stipulation there that says, unless required by law, we do not pay out earned vacation at termination. And again, as long as the state doesn't require it, the company does not have to pay that out. But it's critical. The one takeaway there is to avoid ambiguity and to make it as crystal clear as possible. Ideally, the organization should have it in writing. The more clear you are, the better. And you had talked about, Josh, you had talked about risk mitigation. That's ultimately the goal. The goal, you can't avoid all lawsuits and employment taking action against you. But ideally, what you can do is attempt to mitigate your risk. And having formalized written policies and making it as clear and comprehensive as possible and communicating to your employees, having a meeting with all employees so that they have a policy in hand and you've reviewed it with them, allowed employees the opportunity to ask questions, that is going to go a long way in, again, reducing risk. Excuse me, reducing litigation and helping avoid potential litigation.
Does that help you, Josh?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. And that, again, that's a great question.
Okay, Dave, we've got about another 5 minutes. Finish
great.
Up on
so
the three.
So why don't we finish up with the last two items? The last two items also go hand in hand. Number four is, again, in the top five most common HR mistakes made by small and startup organizations. Number four is failure to provide performance assessments. So there's a performance review and a performance management process. Performance review is typically a one-time event, usually completed annually. Performance management is an ongoing process. Ideally, organizations, what we recommend is to have a performance management process where the organization is spelling out what the organization goals are, communicating those to the organization, and then cascading and aligning those goals down to the department level to employee level. So say our organization goal, for example, is to increase revenue year over year 20%. That goal is communicated to employees at the top level. And then what do we need from sales? What do we need from marketing, engineering, finance to accomplish that goal? And that goal goes all the way down to the employee level. Ideally, in the very least, an organization should be providing employees an annual formal performance review in writing, outlining what the employees' specific contributions were, what they did well, what are any opportunities, what are the goals for the upcoming year. The performance management process is something ideally that should be happening on an ongoing basis. Ideally, an employee should be provided with timely feedback on how the employee is performing, good and opportunities for improvement on a timely basis. And ideally, those conversations should be happening on a regular basis. What I suggest is no more than every month, having an informal touch base with an employee. It doesn't have to be an hour-long conversation every month. It could be a quick touch base. It could be 5 minutes. Maybe you spoke to the employee just yesterday. Everything is good. How are we doing on this project? Terrific. Do you need any additional support from me? Excellent. And you move on. But ideally, this is something that is going to impact the organization's bottom line. This isn't just a good thing to have. So case in point, I have a president of one of my clients who implemented a performance management process. What you use, what the organization uses, I'm not as concerned with, whether it's on paper, whether it's online or electronic form. The fact that you have this in whatever capacity is the more important thing. So in this example, this president told me he implemented a performance management process, communicated goals to the organization, cascaded those goals, had a formal review for the first time, and he found that in the 2 years he had this performance management process, he had the best 2 years financial performance-wise ever. So the takeaway is employees want to know how they're doing. Provide them with feedback on a regular basis. And the last item, number 5, improper documentation. If I could get every small business owner to get into the habit of doing one thing, it would be to document conversations involving performance, employee performance. Many of the lawsuits that business owners see are due to improper documentation. So provide employees, if you're having performance concerns, document those concerns, specifics. What are the issues? What does the employee need to do to bring the performance in line with organization standards? What will happen if they don't do so? And even if you have a verbal discussion with an employee because you don't want it to get to a written formal process, have the verbal discussion and follow it up with an email. What exactly, what was the date and time of the meeting? What was said by you, the manager? What was said by the employee? And what are the follow-up steps?
Amen. I want to go back to Josh because he's been very patient with a very interesting presentation. Josh, remind us about your company and what you do for our audience.
Yeah, thanks, Don. So our company is Hostway.com. Hostway is a global provider of cloud and hosting, basically providing servers and managed services to SMB organizations and enterprise organizations alike. We help customers keep their servers online, make money, and or run their applications so they can continue to do their daily work on the inside.
I know you were on more than you thought. If you had to tell small business anything based on your experience, what would it be?
In regards to just e-commerce in general, leverage organizations like ours just to see if we can help you save money or make more money. Today's environment is just very competitive when it comes to e-commerce applications, and with everyone bringing their products to market, you really need a professional organization like ours to help you increase your market traction increase your page views, SEO optimization, etc. And if you're not leveraging organizations like us, all that means is it's more money being wasted going to your competitors and less market traction.
Thank you, Josh. Dave, you've given us a great outline. What would be the single thing you most want a small business client to do to be effective?
I think the most important thing, if there's one takeaway from the presentation, is for organizations to partner with someone and get the help they need to ensure that, again, they have documentation, they're following standard processes for all the federal and state requirements, and if they need help, they should ask for it. But number one, make sure that you have documentation. Documentation for things that are going well and opportunities for improvement with your team.
And people want to reach you and your organization?
Thank you, Don. Let me first give the audience our website. So, again, it's Trinet, and our website is www.trinet.com. So www.trinet.com. And if I can be of any further assistance, I'm happy to provide my email address to the audience as well. And that is David, D-A-V-I-D, dot Edelson. And it's spelled E-D-E-L-S-O-N at Trinet, T-R-I-N-E-T dot com. And again, Josh, Don, your audience, thank you so much for the time today. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you, David, and thank you, Josh. I see our next guest is ready, and I want to thank both of you for joining us and giving us some interesting thoughts for today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next guest is Richard Milam. He's CEO and president of EnableSoft, and he wants to speak about automation. David, Richard, are you on?
I'm on the call.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today, Donald?
Pretty good. Pretty good. You're going to have a tough act to follow. David really has a presentation, but from what I've heard about you, you're well suited for it.
Okay.
So, we always ask our guests, first question is always a little bit about themselves personally before we discuss anything else. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a father of two college-age daughters, and I have a stepson and a stepdaughter. Through my marriage of 3 years ago, I started EnableSoft 20 years ago to market technologies I had developed doing bank conversions, moving data when banks bought other banks. In the mid-90s, that had to be done very fast. Most of it was being done manually. But I'll come back to that. Prior to that, I was in nuclear submarines in the Navy, missile submarines for 4 years in the Pacific. After college, I worked for the guy that invented the automated teller machine in Dallas, Texas, and put systems and networks of automated teller machines in. That was the time when it took 30 years to get utilization of a new technology above 30%. That happens much faster these days. I was helping a banker, consultant friend of mine, help banks move data during the S&L divestiture of the mid-90s, because when the banks bought up the S&Ls that were being divested by the Resolution Trust Corporation, many of them were relegated to entering that data manually. You would walk into a bank boardroom, you'd see a dozen PCs and people, mostly ladies there, sitting with green bar reports, keying in names and addresses and account information. Well, we had some technology that was kind of a cut-and-paste technology that was able to automate some of that, but not quite adequately. And then I built a product that's now called Foxtrot. Today, we're in over 500 banks on four continents, major healthcare companies as well, and a dozen different industries. Our technology is called Foxtrot, and it enables non-technical people, knowledge workers, and subject matter experts to integrate, migrate, and manage data without programming. They can do it without any IT support or vendors' involvement.
Okay. So now you have a fascinating topic, and I'm just going to keep quiet and let you talk about it, because automation and transfer of data, et cetera, is something we're all concerned about. So please start wherever you want and fire away.
Yeah, well, it's today this is called robotic process automation as of a couple of years ago. The Institute for Outsourcing is now called the Institute for Robotic Process Automation, and they're kind of the bellwethers of that name, robotic process automation. What does that really mean? It's really a continuation of the revolution that started when the personal computer came out and people had access to spreadsheets. Knowledge workers, executives had access to spreadsheets, and they were ready to slice and dice their data, but they had trouble getting the data from the mainframe computers because IT kind of had that locked up. Well, what eventually happened, as we know, is that the business people won that battle and they got access to their data. And today a lot of data lives in spreadsheets, and it's sliced and diced there. I have personal experience with actually doing entire data conversions in spreadsheets. The other piece of that puzzle is, okay, once that data is in the hands of the knowledge worker, are they a subject matter expert from either, you know, in a spreadsheet or they pulled a report from somewhere, and they've sliced and diced it, and they now they have a business initiative. Maybe it's ordering credit cards in a data breach, or integrating data to a new customer relationship management system that they're forced to deal with, but they want to get their old data over. There's really no way before robotic process automation like ours for them to do that themselves. They had to manually type it in, just like those ladies at the bank conversion, or they waited for IT to do something, which was forever, unfortunately, and not at the speed of business. Robotic process automation enables it's another technology that's evolved under our stewardship for 20 years that enables people to take that data that they have and marshal it into their business system or a system of record through a non-invasive, accountable, safe method where that system thinks it's a human being entering data in fields, clicking check boxes, radio buttons, and submit buttons, so that it's really the system thinking that it's a human being doing it, but the knowledge worker has created a script with our technology to teach our technology how to operate, our robot how to enter that data or perform that function. What's good about that, Donald, is that it's, as I said, it's safe and it's accountable. So everything that goes in through those screens, they have to have the credentials to do it. So they can't do stuff that they're not allowed to do anyway, manually. There's usually an audit trail in place because the systems track who does what. And so there's a good audit trail usually of the system of record. And, they can enter a lot of data without having to do it manually, which causes errors. And that's the economies of scale and the efficiencies that our customers are getting. They're recognizing sub 90-day return on their investments. They're able to give this technology to their knowledge workers within a couple hours of web training or even less. They're off and running and doing the automations themselves.
Well, that's interesting. The data, does it have to be numerical data, or can it be other? I'll tell you why I'm asking the question. We have to transfer over 5,000 stories that we have put up on our various websites into one database. And no one seems to have come up with a way that we can do it other than manually. Go to each story, paint it, and then put it into another database. Is this the type of thing that someone could do, or am I just being Pollyannish?
Oh, no, you could do that today with our technology. You just have Foxtrot do the clicks and the cut and paste that you would do manually, and teach it how to do one, and then it runs on the rest of the records, either driven by a file or a number of iterations, etc. So, you know, it's not just numerical data, it's any data.
But and if I understand what you're saying, and pardon me, I happen to sit on the National Robotics Education Foundation Board, you know, and you say robotic. I've never quite heard it used in that term, but in effect you're saying it's just a rote procedure that a robot can do better or equal to an individual. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I'm sorry?
It's as simple as what you just said. You said it well.
Well, when I saw the note about you, I felt the kinship. I have dealt with information for many, many years. I remember going back now to 1975 when we were trying to do the same thing in McGraw-Hill with the mountains of information, and we just simply could not, you know, just at the dawn of the computer and content age, and moving stuff from one system to another involved hundreds of people doing hundreds of repetitive tasks. And in fact,
right,
you're saying that we can now do it much faster and probably more accurate. That we had a error rate of 1 in 100. I'm sure you're way above that now.
Well, I mean, if the machine is doing it and you've taught it to do what you want it to do accurately, it's, the error rate is zero. You know, the scenario you described, where there was a lot of people doing a lot of manual processes to do these conversions, that goes on every day in real business in the back room, and doesn't have to be that way anymore. You know, the work that we've put into our technology, and of course there's others doing it as well. We don't think anybody's as good as us as being easy to use and can learn it in a couple hours. But it's industrial strength, and it can be used on most, you know, any Windows, Internet Explorer, web, legacy system through a terminal emulator that you deal with based on different versions. We have versions that are available on the website that kind of lower end that only work with Windows. We call it the Workstation Edition. It kind of would do pretty much what you just described that you needed to do with maybe with your archiving your stories. Of course, if it's web, you'd need what we call our Professional Edition, which is available there as well. The larger, more enterprise users are going to need our enterprise version that support more users and do more things. But the concept is just the same. If the people are doing it, there's going to be mistakes. We're just human. We get bored. Manual data entry is mind-numbing, laborious labor. That doesn't have to be. And if you're lazy like me, you don't want to do that. You want to use a machine to do it. We use a machine,
yes,
to mow our yard. Why wouldn't we use a machine to move data around if we can do that?
Yes. Well, very, very interesting. You say there's a version you can use that you can download you can download and you literally use on your computer?
Right. Yeah, you're using it there on your computer. As soon as you download it, you run through a tutorial or a couple videos. We provide support at an extra fee, but you can use it today. Our website's enablesoft.com, enablesoft, and you go to the buy page, and there are versions that can be downloaded for reasonably priced number of between $5,000 and $5,000today.
It's something I'm going to look at at the end of this program, because we're on we happen to be on a system, on a content management system that is no longer supported, and at some point it's going to go down, and there's got to be a way that we can take that information and move it over into another system, and that's what I'm really worried about.
I think our professional edition for about $1,500 or less would do that for you.
Well,
you would be able to do it with that product.
I'm sorry?
We would be able to do that probably with our product of professional edition with 1 to 3 websites.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna definitely look at it. Who would buy your product in the small business area?
Well, that person in the operations area in the back room that gets gets the burden laid on them of doing the compliance or the data migration for business initiatives, marketing initiatives, data emergencies like data breaches, things like that, and they need to do things today at the speed of business, and they can't wait for a vendor IT to do something. They're the usual buyer, and that's even the buyer at the enterprise level of the 100 employee to 500 employee business. It's the person, the knowledge worker in operations, or the executive that manages those people that needs to solve a problem today, and we do a brief demo, maybe a proof of concept with them. There's usually a lot of aha moments that go on because people are not aware that this kind of functionality exists and it's available at this price point today. And once they have that, 7 out of 10 of the people that we do proof of concepts with end up becoming customers.
Will you mention your website again so people know how to reach you?
Of course, yes. EnableSoft.com, EnableSoft.com.
Well, I really appreciate your time. What would be your single thought that you'd like to pass on to small business leaders?
Small business leaders are the engine of the American economy, and we need tools and technologies and partners that enable us to move at the speed of business. And I applaud you and am proud to be your partner.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us today. It's been illuminating. It may, if nothing else, it may give me a way of saving my websites.
Well, give me a call if I can help you with that, Donald.
Believe me, I'm going to talk with my IT people, one person. We're a small company, but we're definitely going to do something about it, because at some point we're going to go down and we may not be able to get up again. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't want that to happen. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care. Bye.
A really exciting program today.
Thank you for listening tonight. All of our guests are invited because they offer actionable advice to our audience. They do not pay to join us, but rather demonstrate their capacity for helping our audience add profits. Thank you for listening, and we'll be here again next week with other experts to talk about ways to improve your profit picture. Remember, we're here every week at blogtalkradio.com/smallbusinessdigest. If you like what you heard today, tell others about our efforts. If you would like to be a guest or suggest topics for future hours, email me at info@smallbusinessdigest.net. That's info@smallbusinessdigest.net. We would also like to